Hey, this is John Bollinger with Premier Guitar, and I'm in historic Studio A in Nashville, Tennessee, with Dave Cobb,
hey,
Grammy-winning producer, songwriter, musician. This is your place.
It's not my place. It's everyone else's place. I just happen to be hanging out here quite a bit lately.
Great. Well, man, tell me about, let's start with these guitars, I guess.
You have
a ton of great gear here, but let's start with this, because it's such, you have a lot back here, but these are, we've culled a few of your faves from the pile.
Yeah. These are my Desert Island ones, I think. But yeah, you want to start off?
Yeah.
All right, cool. This is my first great guitar I ever bought. And this one is the only guitar, I think if I sold everything, it'd stick around. And this guitar is really funny. It's been used on tons of records, but when I was touring in a band, it's the only guitar I owned.
Really?
So every night I'd change the strings and make sure it didn't break because I didn't have a backup. So I bonded to it because I had no other guitar, no other money to buy another one. But this is a 66 Esquire. The funny story, I was in Atlanta. I was living there. And this guy used to go around and sell these guitars in town, to, like, pick up old stuff and flip it. He thought it was an original Olympic white Tele, and it had overspray on it with this, it had been refinished on top. So he bought the guitar, put a chemical on it, just tried to get back down to the original color, and ruined it. So he sold it, I think I bought it for $800 or something like that.
Wow.
And come to find out about 20 years later, it's actually original Fiesta Red. So the guy ruined the guitar. But I love it. Look at that. This is just,
oh, that's great.
It's,
yeah, he
terrible.
Relic'd it for you.
And I was in a big Who phase at the time, so I think I put a number because somebody put a strap lock here to try to be all Pete Townsend, and now it's just ironic. But this is my number one of all my guitars I've ever owned.
That's great. So original pickup in it?
You know, it's funny. When I got the guitar, the original pickup died, and I sent it off to be rewound, and I moved so many times. I put a Jerry Donahue pickup in it briefly and loved it. And just forgot to put the original pickup back, so I have no idea what the original pickup is. So I'm still chasing the dream of the pickup. So if anybody has a suggestion, I still haven't found the magic it used to have. But.
Right. So in the comment section, if you have that pickup,
find me something good.
find me something good.
Yeah, that's my number one.
That's great. Okay. That's an impressive start.
Let's go. You want to get another one?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
cool.
Let's do them all.
It's probably. Probably my number two. This I bought, there was a guy, Dan, who owns 65 Amps out in California. Every time I go by a shop, this guitar was sitting on a stand, and I wanted that damn thing so bad, and he wouldn't sell it. And finally, for some reason, I don't know, he's maybe buying a house or something, he sold the guitar to me, and it's been chasing it back ever since. And I've had it, and this is, we used this on, you know, the Sturgill record, Metamodern. We used it on a lot on Isabel Southeastern.
Oh, yeah.
And the last record, Something More Than Free. And something about Jason and this guitar bond. And I told him I'd give it to him if we sold X amount of records. And I set the number so damn high, I can't get it. but you know, you guys can help.
Yeah.
And you'll hurt me because I don't want to sell the damn thing. But him and this guitar bond like crazy. So most of the slide work, or a lot of the work, I think, on Southeastern was this guitar.
Now, did you play on that album as well, or you produced?
I did not play on Southeastern. I played some acoustic on Something More Than Free. I mean, Jason's one of the best guitar players. I think people need to, you know, obviously his lyrics and his songwriting are so good, his voice is so good, that it'd be fun to have him just do a guitar geek out, so that people can see how good he plays. He's truly one of the best slide players on earth, and. You know, I don't like picking up guitars around him because he's so good, you know. So I kind of meekishly hide when he plays guitar because he makes them sound good and it makes you feel incompetent. He's so damn good. So
we did, in fact, check out his rundown as well. Jason's rundown is.
Oh, he's got the fever, man.
Yeah.
He's the guitar fever.
Yeah, that dude's got some gear.
There's a little pool of three or four of us that all have the fever, and we should not hang out. We should not be friends because we're all going to get divorces based on, you know, chasing guitars, I think. So.
Well, of all the addictions, that's the...
I don't know what's worse.
I don't know.
I really don't know what's worse. It might be cheaper to be a crackhead. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I'll turn into. But yeah, there's something about this original. This is 59.
Oh, how great. Is that
Firebird Jet.
Is that pinned or did you pin the bridge or
you
still
know,
moving?
Dan, the previous owner, had a lot of work done to it, and I couldn't tell you what that work does or was done on it. But these original patent apply for Filtertrons are just magic. There's complete magic to that. So
what a beautiful guitar.
This guitar kills me.
It's so cool. In the 50s, they were making guitars that look like spaceships.
You know? I love it. I know. Yeah. Now we're making guitars that look like 50s guitars.
Right.
Which is really ironic.
Yeah,
which is cool because they, you know, maybe they're way ahead of their time.
Yeah. So cool.
Some other stuff I like. This is my favorite Les Paul I've ever owned.
Oh, yeah.
This I bought in parts. This is a 52 Les Paul that I think Terry Mueller did a conversion on it and reset the neck and took off the trapeze tailpiece. And now it's got a proper, 57 neck angle.
Oh, great.
I put the mirror top knobs on it because I always love that 60 Les Paul look.
So were you going online and looking for the original knobs and all that?
Oh yeah.
You went down that?
Oh yeah, I went down the rabbit hole. Yeah, there was one time where I went in old Fender bodies and necks forever trying to put together the ultimate Fender because I'd read about Clapton doing that with his guitar.
Which he bought all those Fenders in...
Same shop.
Yeah,
right?
In Nashville, right?
Was it really? Wow.
Yeah, he was in Nashville.
They were like $200 or something like that?
Yeah, he bought a bunch of them, brought them back, stole the best parts to make Blackie, I guess. Gave one to George Harrison.
Crazy.
They were all bought on Broadway in Nashville.
Damn it.
Yeah.
But I put PAFs in it here. I think one of the, this is a real PAF, I'm not sure, 58, 59, and the other one's just a T-top, humbucker, Gibson. And I love this pickup. This is the jam, it's just a T-top. But I went searching for the ultimate PAF, and this is the best one I found. So I get real dorky with this stuff. There's something, it's just fun to chase, dragons. And
right, yeah, totally.
It's almost more fun not to catch them, too, so you can keep playing. But, yeah, this guitar's been on just tons and tons and tons of records. A lot of the Rival Sons stuff, I think, used this early on.
Great.
And
yeah, that's great. So when you're playing that guitar, I mean, do you prefer it in a classic kind of overdriven way, or is it equally sweet, clean?
Well, I mean, my hero growing up was Jimmy Page, 100,000%.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
My ideal tone growing up was, a Les Paul and a Marshall kind of deal.
Right.
So even when I play Fenders, I'm still looking for the Les Paul Marshall.
Yeah.
It's like there's always a thing, and I like that kind of right at overdriven moment.
Yeah.
When things start to. And Angus was a huge influence. To me, my two favorite guitar players growing up was Angus Young and Jimmy Page. So between what they had, it's something completely unattainable, but I like that sound. I mean, that's always been, I may play trying to think of a random amp, a Fender Champ, I want it to sound like a Marshall,
Yeah.
I've always been kind of seeking that same kind of deal. And Zeppelin 1 to me is the ultimate guitar tone of all time.
Right,
period.
Which I think most of that was
Supra,
a Tele,
right?
Through a Supra.
Yeah.
Right?
I think the Supra Fuzz is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Which I've got one of those, and those are secret weapons too.
Always. Yeah. Yeah, but I think a lot, it's funny, that even Angus Young, Page and Angus Young, they're not, when I listen to them today, their tone is not as dirty as I remembered it.
It's not dirty, and it's kind of bright.
Yeah.
I like the bright.
Yeah.
I think the 80s went weird when everybody was here on a Les Paul the whole time, all this rhythm position.
Yeah.
Something about that, Page always had that middle position thing rocking.
Yeah.
And that since I've been loving you, that's one of the quintessential guitar tones to me.
Yeah. Well, that is awesome. So it was converted before you got it.
Before I got it.
Yeah.
And there was a guy, I was living in California, in LA, and there was a guy, this guy Dave Kalish, he's an absolute expert on guitars, and I used to go pick his brain all the time, and I was like, man, can you help me find one? So he found that one, and the moment he found it, he's like, I don't want to sell it. I'm like, man, you helped me find it. It's like, I don't want to sell it, so. I usually practice talking people out of things, and it took a while to talk them out of that guitar.
that's great.
Let's move on to this one. This one is one, I chased a guitar for about 5 years. It was at Guitar Center here, and you're not gonna be able to see this on camera, I don't think, but it says Rebel right here. Somebody had sticker on it, and I always thought that was so hip,
Right.
It was probably done in early 60s or something. And this is a 1960 335, original PAFs, changed to the Grovers, which is, again, a super cool Jimmy Page thing,
Right. I don't mind that, man.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love when guitars are messed up. I love headstock repairs. I love refins.
Yeah.
I love dogged out guitars. It really scares me to play a clean guitar.
Right.
Yeah. I don't like wearing a suit. So, I don't want a guitar that feels like a suit.
Yeah. and also, I think there's a legitimacy to it because, in the 80s, you know, everybody jacked their guitar because it was like a kind of took pride in it. You know, it's like, hey, man, I improved it. And so when I see something really clean, I kind of question.
Yeah, weirds you out a little bit.
Yeah, like, why didn't you play it?
that's a really good thing.
Yeah.
This guitar, I know Scott Holiday from Rival Sons used this a ton on the last couple Rival Sons album, and there's something about it. This sounds like Paul Kossoff's Les Paul.
Right.
It has that real burnt. There's like a burnt kind of sound I always look for in Gibsons, and this one just has it. And I searched for many, many years. As a matter of fact, I had a killer 61 335 that I never thought I'd get rid of, and Jason started playing it a lot. Isabel started playing on the Something More Than Free album, and he really bonded with the guitar. He's like, dude, sell me this one. I was like, hell no, I'm not selling you that guitar. And so he kept going and going and going until one day I sold it, and now that's his main guitar.
Yeah, his rundown. It's actually Perry, who's on the camera right now, did that rundown.
Oh, cool.
And I think that guitar is on it. So
man, that guitar is insane. And there's a picture his wife took of the day I sold it to him, and he looks like a little happy, you know, child, and I look miserable. And the day he sold that to me, I knew where this guitar was, and it was overpriced, and I called them up and made an offer, and they took it that day. But this sat on the wall at Guitar Center for a good 5 years, you know.
Really?
It was just, you know, I think it was bald at the height when these things were going crazy, and was marked up too much, but they were really great and gave me a good deal. So I finally got it after chasing this thing forever.
That's great. Yeah, it's funny, the market of vintage guitars, it got crazy expensive.
It did, yeah.
And now it's kind of leveled off, but who knows.
Thank God. Yeah, yeah. It seems like it's come down. This guitar is real special to me. I got this the night of the CMA Awards with Chris Stapleton when we did the Justin Timberlake and Chris thing.
Right.
And we all played, and you know, they called like, you know, you want to try something for the show? And so I went online and looked at what would be cool, a cool Gibson thing. And I've always loved this wine red. I remember seeing Pete Townsend's wine red Les Pauls, and there was something so hip about it. I was always a big Pete Townsend fan. So they bought this just in time. I mean, just before we went on. And I don't know, it always means a lot to me because that day, I think, changed all of our life. And it was just a really special moment to be with Chris up there. And
right,
you know, be playing these things up there. And so I'll always be forever thankful for this guitar, and it's real sentimental. So I've been kind of forcing it to, you know, on a lot of stuff. I love it.
So did they literally bring that?
They bought it to the show.
To the show, and you never played it, just strapped it on all right, let's go.
It was pretty crazy, yeah.
That's pretty cool to never play a guitar and then get in front of 10 million people.
I didn't think it was that. I thought it was like my aunt and uncle and mom watching at home or something. Now I'll be scared to death. Thanks for spoiling. Now I can't do it again. Jesus. So you mean a lot of people watching stuff?
Yeah, wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah. Damn. Now I'm nervous every time I do that thing.
Don't want to mess that one up.
Yeah, it was a crazy night. I think it's been a year in about a month, and it's we're all still in shock from that day, you know.
Yeah, well, man, it really it's so interesting the way that work that you all were doing kind of changed. It has been like a paradigm shift in the way country music is perceived and actually being made right now, you know.
Well, I assure you that we didn't try to shift anything or change anything. We made Traveler. It was actually done in this room. We're just having a good time, man. It was like, you know, being 15 and having your buddies over and playing in your garage. I mean, there was no pressure and there was no commercial aiming or no agenda at all. It was just having fun.
That's great. So, okay, we'll get back to guitars, but when you mention it, so do you literally just kind of cut in the round like this?
Yeah, sometimes we put drums in the booth, sometimes we don't. But, you know, Traveler was done all in here with drums in here and then also drums in the booth. But, you know, everybody seeing each other and reacting in the same room. It's just, that's what's great about these magic spaces. I mean, there are very few places where you can set up and it sounds and it just works with everybody in the same room. I mean, this place was designed when people were a lot smarter than they are now.
Yeah.
You know, and next door at RCA Studio B, and also the Kwanzaa down the street, they created the Nashville sound, which is the, you know, they wanted Sinatra money, so they had strings and, you know, choirs and stuff on country records and the
Countrypolitan.
Yeah, Countrypolitan sound. So they made so much money off of that that they expanded over here so they could have, you know, an entire choir, you know, the singer, the band, an orchestra, you know, drums, everything in one room. So it was built for, purposefully built for that kind of recording. So it's it works, and it's honestly, I feel like a jerk because it's you pull the faders up and it's kind of cheating, you know. It really is. I mean, there's no skill to it, man. You just turn things on and
well,
it sounds good.
It's amazing how it gets away from everything is about getting everything separated and no bleed. But really, like like that sound.
But it's like,
man,
it's not that reverby. It's really controlled.
They
controlled it in a perfect way. You know, my quintessential sounding records are like the Stones' Sticky Fingers, Can You Hear Me Knocking? You can just tell they're all in a room and they're playing and they're reacting, and the guitar's bleeding into the vocal mic and that's making the guitar sound cooler. And you know, the drums are bleeding into everything as well. And it's just hip. I love that. I think people really, they talk about vinyl albums all the time and old records, like old records sound amazing. Ah, I gotta get that old record. It sounds so much better on vinyl. But I think in actuality, what they're really chasing is humanity. People all in one room reacting to each other.
Yeah.
And now we don't have to do that. Back then they had to do that, so they didn't have a choice, and it went to vinyl because they didn't have a choice. But it's that humanity and those great players that make those records sound amazing, you know?
Yeah, I think that's totally it. I think that the whole digital thing, it's not like...
Digital's not a bad thing at all.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like, it's not that analog sounds better. It's that when in analog, you do have to kind of listen. There's not going to be the overdubs as much. You're going to kind of just all play together and be tight.
I think it's, you know, it's really just people being in a room, you know? Remember why we all got in this. I know, you know, I still remember the first time I ever got together with kids in fifth grade to start a band.
Yeah.
And we were all terrible, but we got in a room and we turned amps on and they were loud and you got excited. And, you know, it's just that feeling. I always want to continue that feeling I had then.
Yeah.
I try to do that still at 42, you know?
Right. So. Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, I know this is a little side bit, but it's interesting how, I mean, people wonder kind of where producers come from, but really they come from guys, kids playing in a room. With their buddies, and then bands, and then it just goes from there.
Well, being a producer, you have to be a really good liar. I mean, really, did somebody give you a producer degree? You know? Like, nobody ever gave me a degree. You know, like, you can't pass a producer class. You just lie to people and say, yeah, I produce records, and hopefully they believe you.
Yeah.
But there's no such thing as a, you know, anointed producer. It's just, you lie a lot. You know, convince as many people as you can, and then you are. You know?
Yeah, well, that's a very humble way of putting it. You've had an amazing track record. As I was talking earlier about, you know, the whole Shooter thing, you were like a kid when you produced that record.
We were all kids, yeah. We got, thanks to him, I'm in Nashville.
Yeah.
You know, who knew I would be here?
Right, you were in L.A. when you did 4th of July?
Yeah, I ran away from Georgia to California, you know, just because I wanted to make rock and roll records. And I got out there and I met Shooter. Somebody said, you guys are from the South, you both get along, and put us together, and we hit it off. And made that record, and
that is a rock and roll record. That is a
don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
don't tell the country people that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's a rocker.
Yeah. Well, sure. That's more. That kind of sounds like a classic Stones record to me.
Well, we love that stuff. So I think we're trying to just make it sound fun, you know.
Yeah.
And anyway, we're here now because of it, I think.
Awesome. Okay.
All right.
Sorry, back to guitars.
Next.
Yeah.
Next. All right. Let's go with this. This is I just got this one recently. I got this from a guy in town, Tom Bukovec.
Oh yeah.
And this was his number one. And I played this guitar years ago and I made a joke. I was like, man, I'll trade you three guitars for this guitar. So of course he goes in there and he picks out my best three guitars. Like, I was just kidding. Anyway, for years I've wanted this guitar and he's chasing a bigger dream right now. He's getting this crazy guitar. So he finally sold it to me about 2 months ago. And this thing is like a piano. It's just loud and live. And there's very few of them that do that. This just does. Here, you check it out. It just rings and rings and rings.
It's, you know,
like, it's acoustically
lighter than I imagined.
It's crazy light. It's got that cool 57 slight V to the neck. And
wow, that's so great, man. And it's interesting the way those bridges really stick up, like they hurt your hand.
Yeah, this one's even worse. This one, look at that.
Yeah.
It's like, you need tetanus before you play the guitar.
Well, it's because back then they put the ashtray over it.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know if you can see how those things will just rip your hands apart. But back when they built them, you know, Leo just said, well, I'll put a cover over it and you'll be protected.
I think
protected.
He just went down to Home Depot and picked up a screw. You know, it's not even, I don't know how much thought is in that part, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's literally, you know, let's just see if we can find things that poke people and put them on the guitar.
Right. Now, the Esquires, they...
I've always been an Esquire guy.
And they're routed, I think, underneath that cover. It's routed for another pickup.
That's right. It was just cheaper to get it without it.
Yeah.
But Esquires are cool because I think you can make that sound like any guitar you want. You can make it a jazz guitar, a heavy rock guitar, a country guitar.
Right.
I feel like with a good Esquire, you can make it sound like a Les Paul. You can make it sound like a, you know, a Fender. You can do anything with it. So I think, you know, if I had one guitar, it would be one of those, you know?
Yeah, so you don't even miss that neck?
No, not really. Oh. Not really. But you can do a lot of things. I mean, when I was a kid, there was this great guy in Atlanta, Peter Stroud, and he plays with Sheryl Crow.
Sure.
And just an unbelievable player, one of my favorite players in the world. We worked together at the store, and I was chasing, like, you know, the goofiest guitars and amps at the time. And he'd be like, oh, man, you should check out this, you know, 50-watt Marshall. And I was like, oh, man, I want to mess a boogie, you know? He's like, no, check it out. And he would show me how to use it. And in showing me how to use it, you know, he would do the old thing where he'd dime the Marshall, and then he used a volume and tone, roll the volume and tone back until you got the thing. And then if you needed to go for it, you crank it all the way up. So I learned that trick from him real early on, and it's always stuck with me. Between the volume and tone in this thing, it's so many colors with one pickup. You know, you can get that cool Southern rock guitar tone when you crank this all the way back, you know?
Right.
And the Angus thing, I always felt like he was about 75% back a little bit. You need to go for solo.
Yeah.
So I really learned how to work the volume and tone from him years ago. And I'll be forever thankful of that, you know. Otherwise, I'd have been ganging stuff up to try to get the same sound, when in actuality, it's so easy. Plug the guitar into an amp and use these things. There's a reason why they put them on the guitars, you know.
Now, the switch, I've never really understood what they do on an Esquire.
This is, the cool thing about Esquires as opposed to Tellys is this is straight to the jack. It's got no pot. It's got no capacitor.
Really?
In the middle, there. So this is completely inactive there. This position, you get the tone pot in the circuit, and this position is the tone pot rolled all the way off. Somebody told me a long time ago that they thought it was made for, you know, like one guy would play rhythm, you know? They turn it down, and then the other guy would play lead and they switch or whatever, but I don't think that's true. So this one, I think this is a 56. We got this from the folks at Carter's here in Nashville, which is a great guitar shop. This, Chris Stapleton gave me this for my birthday this year. It was the best birthday gift I've ever gotten in my life.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, just insanity. You know, my wife and I have been together for 18 years, and I always try to plant seeds, you know, give me something musical, get a guitar, amp. No, nothing. I get socks. She's going to be mad at me for saying that, but she don't watch this shit.
Yeah, she's not going to sit through this. 3 minutes in, you're like, click.
No, she's amazing, but I've always wanted a guitar for a gift, and it was the first time I'd ever gotten one as a gift for a birthday. So this thing is, you know, I imagine we'll be using this a lot coming up you know, when we do Chris's next record, but just the sweetest thing ever, you know, to walk in and play this. And this is cool because it sounds like, I remember being a kid and reading about Pete Townsend recording, you know, Who's Next. And he was using one of these Gretches in a 310 Bandmaster, right?
Right, in the Bandmaster.
Which is a quintessential Pete Townsend tone, I think, you know? That and the Live at Leeds thing. So I've always wanted one of these big Gretches, and these early DeArmond pickups are so good. So
and the aluminum nut.
Yeah. Right? I thought you said Illuminati nut.
Well, maybe
I want one of those.
Yeah.
I'm ready to join. Illuminati, if you're paying attention, I'm ready to join.
Yeah.
Call me. Beyonce, call me. but no, I love this stupid thing. It's such a great piece, and they're sweet people. Him and his wife are such incredible
and
people.
And it's so cool that you're in, this is like Chet's.
Oh, shit. Somebody's crashing the party. Oh, shit. Come on, crash this party. We're down to one guitar. You can help out with it. You can help out with it. This is get in here first.
I'm Jay.
Hey, I'm John.
John,
good to see you.
To meet you.
Hey, buddy, this is Jay from Rival Sons, one of my favorite singers, period, and he's crashing my party. Get the fuck out of here.
That's a cool cameo.
Oh, man. Well, I think we just come in here and, like, look at the walls, right?
Yeah, that's what
we do.
You get it.
Yeah.
You get the inspiration.
We're on the last guitar here, Jay. I'm going to say a word about this, then I'm going to let you say a word about this. Because this has been, like, if I had one Desert Island kind of riding guitar, it would be this one. And this is the one I use on Metamodern and all that.
Right.
All that's it. Is all this guitar. I've used this a lot. But there's something about you pick it up and it's so warm.
Yeah, it's got ghosts in it.
Come over here. You're on the camera.
Oh, yeah. Get in the shot. Cameo. This is a cool cameo. Yeah, man.
Now, this guitar's incredible.
Here, you talk about it.
I've written some of my songs on this guitar. I'll just pick it up as soon as I get into town. You know, we'd make records and David let me play it. And I just, in the late hours of the night, you know, in the early hours of the morning, this thing's ready to go. It wakes up at
you
night.
You steal it every time you
come
to town,
time,
right?
Yeah, every time.
Now you got one of your own.
Now
right?
I got one of my own. Mine's a 64, I think. And but this one has it. It's got the grease and the grime and the secrets.
You pretty much wrote everything on the last couple hours of that, right? Like 90%.
Yep.
Yeah, on that guitar.
Oh, really? So you wrote like in the studio?
Yeah, we write in the studio.
Wow.
And this is a huge motivator for me.
So when you come in, no ideas, just like like little bits?
Yeah, I write just about every day, but it's different, you know, for Rival Sons. That's been our whole ethic is to write when we get into the studio, and that way we work together and we have to work really, really quickly and write songs on the floor and do it really intense. That way, for us, like with Dave, we're actually laying down the tracks the first, second, or third time we've ever played them. So then it has like that,
right?
That spontaneity.
Yeah.
When you don't really know what you're doing.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's great. Very bandy. Yeah.
We sold that from Sam Phillips. I saw.
Yeah.
I went to this. Sam Phillips had a book that came out this past year, and his son was talking about every day Sam walked into the sun. He had no plan. He knew it was coming in, but he had no plan what songs they were going to record, how they were going to do it. And he walked out with a whole lot of shaking going on, you know?
Yeah.
So we just go in there and make it up as we go along. Because that's when it's fun. If we're not having fun, I mean.
Well, you never know what you're going to get. You don't know what.
It's like a box of chocolate.
Yeah. Well, it has to do with what you had for breakfast or how well you got along with your wife the night before or just whatever.
Right.
All those different things converge and then you get something different every day.
Well, that's probably the seminal writing piece of all of them. So I'm glad you showed up.
Yes,
in time for
absolutely.
That one.
I have a very special relationship. What's that? Oh, okay.
That scares me. The California stuff you got going on.
Yeah.
Scares me.
Yeah.
But
I'm dressed for the commune.
Totally.
Right on. Well, cool, man. I think that's all the guitars.
Great. Well, let's talk about some amps.
Cool.
Okay, so you've got amps like everywhere.
A little bit.
We've narrowed down to a couple of them. Tell me about these.
This is what I'm using 90% of the time these days. A dear friend of mine, this guy Paul Kennelly, who's an amazing songwriter, producer. I got that amp from him this year, and it's just been on every record. I mean, he told me this secret, and I didn't believe him because I always work differently. He's like, you should never turn the tweeds up past 3.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't believe it, and now I'm doing it. I don't know what happened to me. Maybe I'm growing up or something, but it's always just on 3 or 4. Put any mic on it, and it sounds like a record. It's really easy. Well, it's always quiet. We can have it in the room with the band. It doesn't overpower a singer in the room. So it's kind of become the weapon lately.
And it's clean at that at 3, right?
Yeah. It's that marginal thing, but it's just something so right about what Fender was doing in the late 50s, early 60s is so right.
So, that's cool because you always hear about people diming everything.
Yeah.
And to me, they really kind of fart out. Like, I mean, from...
Well, the old speakers can't handle it.
Yeah.
I think if you change it out to greenback or something and the bigger Fenders, the tweed with the Fenders, it's great. But these old These old Fenders, they just kind of fall apart when you really push them.
Yeah.
You know? So that one is just, it's just turning on. Plug in, you're kind of ready to go with it.
Okay, good tip. All right.
So I'm going to scoot right over to this one. This is a Tremolux I also got this year from the same guy, and this has become kind of like the quintessential Keith Richards-ish kind of tone. It's just kind of clean and strong and got tons of top and tons of bottom, tons of body, and this has become kind of a stable too. So the two amps I got from this guy has kind of replaced half my arsenal.
Do you do anything? Do you run into instrument or mic or
I always channel? When I record, little known secret, I record this way. I keep them upside down. Nobody knows about this trick. Try it. No, I'm kidding. That's total bullshit. Total lie.
Yeah,
like, don't do that. It'll just break your damn amps.
Yeah, but, yeah. Put an quarter inch cable angle.
Exactly, yeah. I only record on moon hours. Yeah. So that's a big deal. Harvest Moon is the only time I can record these amps, and they sound good.
That's great. So do you still do the only to three on this? On a tweed like that?
What is that on?
It's on three.
Boom.
Boom.
I don't know why it works. He wasn't lying. Huh. You know, a big thing about these old amps too is really getting the right voltage on the amps. I don't think they were made for contemporary power. So I've been using those brown boxes, which are amazing. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of those.
Yeah,
they're incredible. So I've got a bunch of those around here, and it saves these old amps life. You know, when I first moved to Nashville, I lost two amps, transformers to the power surges, that kind of real hot power. So
yeah,
keeping these on like 115 stable, they open up a lot more. The power is a huge thing on these old amps, I think.
That totally makes sense, because you think about back in the day, what's running to a building, the old screw-in fuses and stuff.
Power was way weaker. Right. Yeah, now it's, you know, like 127 or 124. It gets crazy.
Yeah.
So these things just, this little brown boxes, they're lifesavers with these old amps.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is probably my Desert Island amplifier. This is just a regular old deluxe, you know, mid-60s deluxe amp. I got introduced to Alexander Dumble, and I went to his house, and I had this amp back here, this old tweed amp, and somebody said, you know, maybe he'll take a look at it. So I wanted to get him to kind of fix it up. When I was at his house, I played one of these that he modified, and it just knocked me out. I mean, it was just the most hi-fi 3D sound I'd ever heard, and I think I sold a kidney to get it.
Totally worth it.
Which is why I lean a lot. I'm a little crooked now, you know. But it was totally worth it. Not only did he fix that amp, he completely gutted this thing. Did his own. He has a mod, Ultraphonics, I think is what he calls it. He gutted it. He got crazy on it, and it's magic. It's 3D.
Wow.
And he changed the speaker out. I think he put a greenback in it. And
like a new greenback?
Yeah. He uses new tubes too, man. You know, I was chasing old tubes forever, and I was like, what are you using? Ah, new tubes. You know, it's just his talent level of putting the right cocktail together to make the amp kind of open up and sing. And I think he makes these amps for the individual player's hands too. So it's really cool to walk in there. Walked in with a Gretsch White Penguin. He tuned the amp to my hands, tuned it to that guitar. And when I play that guitar, that's what this amp is supposed to sound like. So.
Wow.
It's a really cool ability that guy has. Just, he's completely magic. But this has been used on every record. We use it on your records. We use it on a lot on Isabel Southeastern, and we use it on, God, pretty much every record I've made since I've got it. I've probably had it for about 8 years now. So.
So when people come in to record with you, do they bring their amps, or do they all use your gear?
Yeah, sometimes they bring their amps. I mean. It's all fun. I mean, I love when somebody brings a cool amp I haven't heard. You know,
yeah.
I like getting dorky into it. And like I said, you know, I got little, you know, probably five people I talk to about guitars, and we're terrible influences on each other, because all we do is sit there and talk about, you know, have you tried that speaker in there? Have you tried that pickup? You know, you should try the strings, and it gets silly.
You know?
So I think I waste half my brain power thinking about this stuff. But you know, somebody told me a long time ago, a really talented producer, this guy Mark Neal, who's kind of a bit of a mentor. He told me the sound doesn't happen in the control room, it happens out here. So getting the sound right and killing ourselves getting the sound right in the room, I think goes a long way to making a record sound the way you want it to sound, you know?
Yeah, rather than polishing a turd.
Well, no EQ can fix a bad guitar amp,
you know?
But, you know, you can put a 57, the cheapest mic possible, in a great guitar amp and a great player, and it sounds like $1 million. So we spend a ton of energy on this stuff, and I'm always chasing the dragon on this stuff. I've been chasing tone since I was a kid, and I still don't think I'll ever achieve Mike Campbell tone, you know? I think that guy's the holy grail of tone.
Yeah.
You know? So, but we're always chasing that. Whatever Mike is doing, I don't think it has anything to do with his guitars or amps. I think it's his hands and his talent.
Right.
We're still chasing that, so.
Yeah, because you look at, like, weird old clips of them playing, like, you know,
German
talk
boxes,
shows.
Yeah, and it sounds amazing.
Yeah, and it still sounds like him.
Yeah, you know? No, he's the king of tones for sure.
Yeah.
Him and I think This is what happens when you stay up late. Things don't work right. Freddie King. I think Freddie King has the best tone.
Right.
Ever.
That Oof. That metal finger pick that he used.
Oh man, for his tone just, is like, just.
Yeah.
That's it, man. That's the sound.
Yeah, it is like a ice pick, man, right here. Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Well, cool, man. You got everything on the amps?
Well, yeah, that covers amps. Let's talk. Do you use much in the way of pedals? We usually talk about
I love pedals.
Okay, so now we're in the console room. You got a couple pedals here. Tell me about them. Let's start with any of this jazz.
I'm going to start with my favorite pedal of all time. This is my absolute favorite pedal. It's a probably late 60s Vox. Oh, shit, I broke it. Well, it used to be my favorite pedal of all time. It's an old Vox Tonebender. And, you know, like I said, when I was a kid, Jimmy Page was my number one, and I'd read that he used this on Zeppelin 1. And Pete Townsend, I think, used a Tonebender as well, maybe a Marshall Superfuzz on that Live at Leeds, which are some of my favorite sounding records. And so
right.
I chased one until I got one. And, you know, this thing, you can put in any little amp and just crank it, attack all the way up and level all the way up, and use your tone on your guitar. And it goes from that sparkling, clean, kind of Hendrix-y sound to just, you know, Black Sabbath and just your volume pot. So I think that's how you achieve a lot of that kind of really sparkly stuff you hear on those records, is by turning your volume almost off on the guitar,
right,
and keeping this pedal all the way cranked.
Man,
so.
I think people back then used their controls more. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Like on their guitar. Like,
definitely.
Like people have relied so much on pedals now that they kind of never even touch that stuff.
Well, I think this is a pedal where it actually aids hugely to touch your volume and tone with the pedal. So
yeah,
this is it. This is Mecca for guitar distortion, mm-hmm, for fuzz for me.
So where'd you find it?
I don't remember. I've probably had this for 20 years. So oh. I'm getting old. I don't remember things. This is a pedal I've used many years and cheat. On a lot of the country stuff, this is the only phaser you ever need.
Right.
I mean, I was really inspired. Full on inspired by Waylon records. And all you gotta do is set it slow and plug a telly in, and you know, then you gotta be Waylon Jennings.
Right. What's really cool.
Then you gotta be a great singer and a great writer and a great player and a legend. So,
Didn't Waylon cut?
He did. He cut the early stuff here, like Daddy Walked the Line, everything in this room, which is crazy.
Here's a cool story about Waylon and this room. I'm told that Chet was producing him, Atkins was producing him. Waylon's like, well, are you gonna play guitar? And he goes, no, because. He said, well, God, I mean, you're Chet Atkins. He goes, yeah, but you don't want to sound like Chet Atkins. You want to sound like Waylon Jennings.
Oh.
And how great is that?
Waylon's
right?
One of my favorite guitar players ever.
Yeah.
Period.
But he wanted to hand the reins over to Chet, but if Chet had played on that stuff, it would have been...
It'd been different.
Wouldn't have been as good.
Yeah. I think all those early players that played with Waylon, you know, on those records, Jerry Reed playing on there, and Wayne Moss, right?
Yeah.
Killer players. This is something I use all the time.
Yeah, and you know those new ones like that? I think they sound as
That's a brand new one.
Yeah,
I've had old ones. Yeah, they do. They're really making them right.
And I like the light. That's an improvement.
The
old ones don't have the light.
This is a pedal I've had for about 15 years or so. I always loved this early Minitone stuff. It was just... This is one of the best like early boutique pedals made, the handmade ones. And it's such a great, just clean kind of boost.
What is it?
Red Snapper, old Minitone. I don't know what the new one sounds
like. Never
heard
of it.
I love them. I've used this a ton. I used to have a Klon, and I started using this, you know, over that. And it's always been great, you know, if you have an amp, an old amp that just sounds kind of a little dull or something, you put this into it, and you can brighten it up without really changing the tone. So I've always loved this pedal. With the new stuff, I think these guys are making great buzz pedals. This sounds like those, you know, super 60s, you know, garage rock records, which I love the way they sound. It sounds like just, you know, early Yardbirds or something. So whatever they're doing, I have no idea what's going on with this, but I like it. I love things that you just plug in and it just sounds right. You don't think about it. And this is one of those pedals. I don't even know what this stuff does.